turning astray of the path that was left long ago. All we leave behind, time after time, is a legacy with nothing to show. Now our country is lost, and it's not without cost, for there's many who struggle every day. And I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and bow our heads and pray. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see?
Hey everyone, this is Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. Today's episode is number 110, and this is going to be an interview with my dad about genealogy and family history. He has been researching that for about 15 years now, and he is visiting here with us this week, and so I want to take the opportunity to interview him about some of the things he's learned about doing research for family history. And you might wonder what this has to do with building a legacy. Well, it's important for us to be able to know our past and the family from which we have come, and be able to pass that on then to our generations that follow us and pass that heritage down. You know, the Bible, of course, is full of genealogical records. The Hebrews were very good at keeping track of those things, and we see those both in the book of Matthew and Luke, as well as in Chronicles and many other places in the Old Testament, where they were very careful and very accurate in recording their family history and the genealogies. It's probably some of the parts where you've skipped over in the Bible and you're reading of it, and yet there is importance to them. And so today what we're going to listen to is an interview with my dad about genealogical history and family history. But before we do that, I want to take care of a little bit of business. First of all, make sure that you're a registered user of the website. This enables you to receive email updates anytime that there is a change to the website. So anytime there's a new post that is listed or anything like that, you'll be notified by email. This maximizes your time, helps you to keep track of what's going on. Second of all, make sure you're sharing us with your friends and family through Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all the various social media that we have out there. And then thirdly, make sure that you're visiting the affiliates that we are a part of. The two affiliates for today, the first one is 48 Days. 48 Days is the work of Dan Miller, and his organization's purpose is to help you acquire or to get into the position of the work that you love, and so that your work is no longer work, but it's considered your life and your ministry and your hobby, all those things, and it's where your passion lies. He's got several good books out there. His most recent one is Where Wisdom Meets Passion, and it's all about trying to incorporate the two things of your life's vocation and your passion together so that you can maximize your time at work. And there's lots of other resources available that you can check out at his website. Two that I would recommend is 48 Days to the Work You Love, which is if you want to be an employee, and then 48 Days to Creative Income, which is one that you should get if you are interested in going into a self-employment position. And then his book, No More Mondays, kind of combines those two. So check out 48 Days. Second up is Envelopes. Envelopes system is the best money management tool that you can find online. And it's a great resource that will enable you to basically manage your money as though it was in cash envelopes, but it's all automated for our generation. And they have just about every bank you might imagine, any investment company for the most part, can be automated on there. So everything, all the transactions are downloaded to your envelopes website, and then you're able to manage that appropriately. You want to check out the demo at the envelopes website and go ahead and sign up for the free version. And then if you like it, you can then transfer that over. I think for about $10 a month, you can get the paid version, and it's well worth it. I use it all the time and am grateful for it. And those are the two affiliates. And then lastly, if you like the show and you want to support the show, the best way to do that is becoming a Legacy Partner. Our Legacy Partner program is $30 a year. With that, you have access to the exclusive members-only webpage that gives you downloadable material as well as some discounts to various vendors that we are associated with, and you're also able to support the show. And I appreciate you doing that. All of that material is probably worth about $50 in value, but you can get it all for about $30 and support the show as well. And so consider doing that. And with that, then, let's go ahead and take care of the major part of today's show, which is a discussion I have with my dad, or basically an interview that I have with my dad about genealogy and family history. Okay, as I said on the introduction, I'm here with my dad, and I'm going to be interviewing him about genealogy research and family history. And he's down here visiting his grandkids, and I guess he might be visiting us too. But anyway, he is here visiting the grandkids. I'm always excited when he is here spending time with the grandkids. And he has done a lot of research on genealogy, and he knows it far better than I do. And so I'm going to interview him on that. And but before I do that, I want to just have him introduce himself a little bit and tell a little bit about who he is and his background.
Oh, all right. I'm Joe Donahue. I'm Steve's dad. I would not want to call myself an expert in genealogy. I have dabbled in it, as I've dabbled in many other things. But I have been doing some genealogy research for almost 15 years now. And I got started because I lived in Montana in a valley. There were a number of people there named Lane as a last name. And my grandmother was named Lane. And when I asked my father about that, he said, "Oh, yeah, they're all related." So I tried to find out how they were related. And that was when I understood the complexity of genealogy the first time. There were cousins and cousins, and there were even a case of two first cousins who got married and had it approved by the Catholic Church with a special dispensation from the Pope. And I said, this genealogy stuff might have something going for it anyway. And my older sister, Jane, had been dabbling in it and had gathered a little bit of stuff about some of the family, mostly my mother's side. And so with that little bit about the two sides, I thought, this is probably worth checking out. And then there was the rumors about this relative that got hung in Montana. And Virginia City, Montana, was the only place that my dad liked to go for rides to. And that was because that's where Clubfoot George Lane was hung. And at this stage in my genealogy research, I'm about 90% certain he was indeed a great uncle. But it's only 90%, and it may never get better because it's hard to find those sorts of things. So that's probably more than Steve intended to have me say, so I'll stop for a minute.
Okay, well, if you were going to give advice to somebody who is just getting started with researching their family history or their genealogy, what would you say they need to do kind of to start with?
Well, the first thing you want to do is plan how you're going to keep track of what you've done and how you're going to record it. There are commercial databases. I think at least one of them is referenced in the notes that go with this write-up. But you need to have a way to record things and your sources. And there's a couple reasons. One is after you've got about 1,000 or 3,000 names in your family history, you will not remember how you found out that, you know, Uncle Johnny did X, Y, and Z, whether it's, you know, committed suicide or sold insurance fraud to somebody, you know. Anyway, you have to plan and figure out how you're going to keep track of records. But the most important thing to do is find all the living relatives that are nearby and interview them and find out as much as you can about what they know. And also look at the written documents that are available. A lot of times families have a family Bible that may have come down for 5 or 10 generations. Other families, they burnt up, their house got burnt, and there's nothing but oral history. But whatever is there, and whoever you've got that's an elder, you visit with them and you gather as much as you possibly can to start with, but again, document where you got it and what it was.
Now, I would imagine that you have spent a lot of time doing this, and anybody who would begin to start doing some research like this would spend a lot of time getting involved. Would you say that it's something that can consume your time? And then also, what are some ways that you might be able to cut some corners so it's not so time-consuming?
If you really get into it and become an aficionado of genealogy, it will be all-consuming. Sometimes it's dangerous to mention to someone that you've dabbled in genealogy because they assume that you're an expert and you spend 24 hours a day, 365 days a year worrying about it.
Kind of like I'm doing with you, right?
To some extent, yes. So it can be a hobby or what I call a lifetime pursuit. In my case, it's both of those, but the lifetime pursuit has to, take a lower level of importance to playing with grandchildren and providing help to local community things in my community and, of course, to my wife and to those kinds of interests. So it can't be all-consuming, and I've got about 100 other hobbies, so I have to give them a little bit of time, too.
So just like everything else, you basically need a balance, right?
Yeah, you have to balance it out, and you got to, set aside time when you're going to concentrate on it. One of the problems with genealogy is that what you think is a 15-minute search, even if you know where you're going to search and what you're looking for, it may only be 15 minutes, but it'll take you 6 hours to get to the stage where you can find the 15 minutes worth of stuff. And the toughest part is the interesting deviations. I found that history suddenly became important to me when I started doing genealogy and tried to fit things together and found out that this uncle that I talked about that might have gotten hung, great uncle, that it was taking place during the Civil War days, and he was hung in January 1864. And it turns out that all the people hung were rebel sympathizers, and all the people doing the hanging were Union sympathizers. And everybody back east wanted the gold. This never even dawned on me when I'd heard the myths at home about maybe there was a relative that got hung. So you do get into some pretty good deviations.
That's interesting. Well, that kind of brings up the next question. That is, where would someone begin to look? What kind of resources are there available either on the net or outside of the internet where someone might be able to go to get some information? You've already mentioned, interviewing relatives would probably be the most important place to start. But beyond that, where can they go? And I think we're going to have, notes in the show notes to all these different resources. But could you just explain a few of them?
I'll try to explain some briefly. There are a lot of libraries that have now genealogical sections, reference areas with tremendous genealogical books. Some of those have donated, my hometown, they've donated their genealogy books to the LDS Family History Center. The LDS Church has one of the main research programs, Ancestry.com, and a group of spin-off ones to that that are, I believe, mentioned in the notes. But they also have, at most of their locations, they have a family history center. And it has written documents and books and listings of people and ships and immigration and all the things that you'd eventually want to start looking for. And they also have copies of the LDS Church's International Genealogical Index. And they have microfilm of many, many locations. I was trying to find some information about relatives in Ireland and couldn't get them through the Catholic Church, who had the records, but I could get them through the LDS Church and the Family History Center because for some reason they were allowed to copy all the microfilm documents of all the churches in Ireland, both Catholic and Church of Ireland. And I don't purport to understand how that all happened, but if it's a source, you go to it. There are the United States census records. There's the National Archives. The National Archives are federal agencies whose purpose is to keep track of all the important archaeological, genealogical, historical information in the United States. They have regional centers. I know there's a regional center in Seattle, Washington. I know there's the main office in Washington, D.C., where I've done research. Those are the two that I have been to. But there are, I believe, 10 of them, but don't quote me on that, across the nation. And they have microfilm and microfilm readers, and you can go back and look at everything from ships lists to old census. They have indexes. They have books with indexes of the German immigrants to America and Irish immigrants to America and different things that historians have compiled in the past. And so those are all starting places. You can also, of course, use Google, Yahoo, or ask.com or any of the search engines and just plug in you know, your family name and genealogy and see what happens, because a lot of folks have put family tree information, usually in a GEDCOM format, but on the internet. So there's a lot of that that you can now reach that wasn't available 20 years ago.
And are there some, I know that there are probably some websites or some software or something like that that you can use to help track some of this stuff and record some of the information. I know you use one of them. Which one is that?
I use Family Tree Maker. It has been good for me for the 15 years I've been doing this. There's Brothers Keepers. There are innumerable familytree.com. There are quite a few of them that have their own method of keeping track, and most of them are organized in such a way that you can put down notes, you can put down sources, problems and questions you want to research some more on. They have a lot of ways to document the sources, like, you know, you got it from the death certificate, or you got it from a marriage license, or where you got your information. They all have one thing in common. They all make new versions, and they all want you to buy the new versions. And many of the genealogy sites will also have you allow you to put your family tree that you've been developing online, and they have programs that will make an assumption about of 100 years, or some cases, if you just put living, they'll delete the personal information about those that are still living, you know, to try to protect privacy, and the programs will automatically do that. So if you want to publish a family tree on the internet, or if you find one that's your family and you think it might be related and want to look at it, you're safe that you're not going to violate somebody's privacy.
Well, that's good. Are there any forums or blogs or podcasts or anything like that that you've listened to or read or anything like that that have been helpful besides, you know, public sites and things like that?
There are probably...
I'm sure everybody and their brother that's interested in geology put something out.
There's somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,500,000 sites dealing with genealogy now. When I took one brief genealogy course online when I was first starting out, we actually developed a couple of websites as a part of our assignments. But they're so numerous, and they change, and they go out of date, or somebody doesn't keep them up. For quite a while, I had my family tree information online on my own website. Then I moved to different emails and didn't keep it up. And, you know, one side of my family is online at ancestry.com, but not because I did it, but because a cousin who had done more research on my grandmother's Lane side, the ones that started it all for me, he's done tremendous research. And so I've captured that and capitalized on it, and I've only been able to contribute a little to him. But there's a lot of sharing between other people that are working on genealogy. If you go into what they call Gen Forum, I believe I had the Gen website in the notes, but I don't believe I put the Gen Forum. But you can go to a Gen Forum and put in a family name, and it's all the people that are asking questions and talking about that site. And then someone will see that you ask a question about it, and maybe they'll have an answer, or they'll say they're a relative, and then you can go from there. They also have what they call one-name studies or one-name sites that just follow a particular name. I go to one that's the O'Donohue Society website, and it's a curious thing, but they believe there's like 500 and some different derivations of how the name is spelled, so... Yeah, that's one caution that I would offer to anyone doing research, is don't believe everything you find, even if it's in writing and even if it's a government document or purported to be the real thing. My mother was born in Ouray, Colorado. She told us that. Everybody knew that. But the church says she was born in Telluride. Now, they're not far away, but it's one of those things that you just, you know, keep checking to try to prove your facts better.
That's interesting. So what would you say are some of the interesting facts or histories that you've learned about our family from doing some research?
Well, it's always pretty distant relatives that did the wild, bad stuff. but there was a cousin whose husband...
Well, yours hasn't been written yet.
Mine has the, and I'm only going to tell the mild things. I'm going to write two versions of my bibliography. One will be the fun, nice, good stuff that I hope I did a few of, and then I'm going to write one under some pseudonym and call it somebody else that tells the real story. We had a one that committed suicide, and the spouse was still living, and I had put that in, and because she was a relative, I, you know, sent it around to where different relatives could hear it and see it, and she sort of asked that I delete that because she didn't want that in there. And so you have to be very sensitive, particularly when one of the relatives is still living. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, after they're deceased, it sort of becomes popular amongst both family members and genealogists to find the guy that was hung and decide if he was truly a relative or not, because that makes it interesting. Now, it sounds like, you know, all of my relatives were those that were doing bad stuff. And the guy that, you know, sold the insurance policy on the Tongass Narrows Bridge, Gallup and Gertie, was just married into the family. He wasn't really a family member, but it's,
no bloodline there.
No blood. But you find things like that. The most famous, if you will, that I found so far was a lieutenant governor in Colorado for a couple of years. So, you know, there's a few that are a little bit famous. But
glad to hear there's not a lot of politicians in our blood.
Not too many. That's about it. There's a few that have been on locally elected. And we won't get into what party they were or what their thoughts were, but I have found everybody from those who were total drunks to those who were total teetotalers. And every issue that comes up, there are people on pretty much all sides of it. I did find some that served in the Civil War and some that have served in other wars, and I don't believe I gave you military sites, but I had intended to. There's tremendous information available at various military sites, and they have a lot of records. You can get for like $2 a summary of the entire service of anybody that served in the Civil War and most wars, in fact, from the military. And that's usually accurate, but as with everything else, a lot of times people lied to get in the service because they were gung-ho and wanted to go and defend themselves or defend their country. And so just because somebody gives an age, you don't get to believe that. Another thing, they had certain rules on how long you had to before you recorded a birth, or in some churches you had certain amount of time to, in the Catholic Church, for example, to have someone baptized. And people may have been born, but they were baptized 6 years later, but it was only 30 days. So you can't really tell exactly where the facts lie. So,
just like anything, when there's a law, there's people that try to get around the law.
Well, or in many cases, it was having to go somewhere or pay money or just didn't get around to it because other things, you know, jumped in the way. So that adds to the sort of the mystery of it. It's a little bit like, you know, trying to find what the fish are biting on. When you're doing genealogy research. So,
mm-hmm. Now, a few years back, you went on a trip to Ireland, and, of course, that was partly for fun and partly for researching family and meeting some family and that kind of thing. What did you learn about your research and about our family from your trip to Ireland?
Well, the trip to Ireland was mostly fun because I found a really good price. And Steve wasn't able to join me because he was about to have a second son. In fact, Samuel was born when we were in Ireland. But my oldest son was able to join me, and we had six really fast-flying days trying to cover, you know, everything in Ireland, which was an impossibility. But I had enough information on my grandmother, on the Lane family, that I thought we might be able to find something. And so we went to a town called Mylach, which looks like it's Moylo. And I learned right away I couldn't pronounce anything in Ireland. And I couldn't understand anything anybody in Ireland said. So that made it a little more difficult. But the green was really there, and there were 40 shades, and I can't wait to get back. But in going to this, we stopped at the place to get lunch, and it was a combination lunch and bar, and we asked the bartender, the guy who served us lunch, if he knew of any of the Lanes, and he said, oh yeah, they're just you know, down that way and that way. And he started trying to describe. He said, but go up there to the drugstore. That's the post office. And they'll know exactly how to get there. So we finished our lunch and we went over there. They gave us a detailed description, which was only like 3 miles away. So we just drove over there. And anyway, there was this lady out working in the garden. And she, you know, stood up and came over to the car. I said, you know, who I was, and that, you know, I was Maggie Lane's grandson, and that I believed that, you know, her husband was probably Maggie's youngest brother. She gave me some really, really penetrating looks. This was a pretty tall, pretty big lady, and she was not exactly friendly initially. And I thought, well, I don't know what we're doing here, because we didn't call her or didn't know how to reach her or anything else. And we visited a little longer, and then she finally realized that, yeah, that her husband, who, of course, had passed away quite a while before, she finally said, yeah, you got the Lane eyes. They look just like Jim did. You want to come in? So anyway, long story short, she showed us the old house that they were all raised in, which is now part of the barn and attached to it. It's about the size of most people's living rooms. And when the other brother, Patrick's family, was there, there were 15 in the house. Mm. And there weren't quite that many in our relative, Connor Lane's family, but there were a good number. Mm. And they got by without all the things that we think we have to have nowadays. But we visited quite a bit. She and her husband had a child and lost him. She told us how to get to the graveyard. And I played Spanish Inquisition, I guess. But I asked her tons and tons of questions and probably should have just visited instead. but she gave me leads on all kinds of relatives. And then once I found some of them, some had done some research and some others. And pretty soon, I have email relatives in England and Ireland and Australia and New York and all over the place. So a lot of that was because of visiting with Nora Lane. And she was 82 or 83 at the time, and she said she was getting older and she had to sell her cows because she just couldn't take care of them anymore. And she passed away a couple, 3 years later. So it was really a godsend that we were able to get there and visit with her. That's so far, that's the only relative that I've found in Ireland. But it's interesting because the other day I got an email from someone who said, I think I knew them. I knew Jim and Connor. Connor never got married. Jim and Nora lost their child. So he's writing about the same events. So
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Makes it pretty fascinating. I suppose that was so, more story than you wanted. But
so overall, you found it beneficial not only just being able to see the culture and meet a relative, but also she gave you a lot of leads that eventually helped fill in some gaps in your research probably, huh?
Oh, definitely. You're always looking for leads that somebody has a story, and most stories and myths have a little kernel of fact in them. And so you go look for what the facts really were, and, you know, hopefully you find it. But she's helped a lot, and seeing Ireland helped a lot. It gave me a real sense of place and a comfortable sense in being there. So, yeah, I'd recommend trying to go back to the countries that you immigrated from if indeed, you know, you're someone who is immigrated. On the other hand, trying to track immigration is a very difficult thing. There are immigration sites, and I believe one of those that's very useful has, I believe, 13 different listings of ships that have the ship's passenger list that different volunteers and others have documented, and it's free to go on there and look. And you can look by surname and find your ancestors. But I think mine came over on a, you know, banana peel or something. So I'm still trying to prove and track down some of them. And many came different ways. Some came through Canada because it was the shortest distance and the cheapest from the Ireland area. Others, my two German ancestors, both came through New Orleans and that direction. So it depends on where ancestors came from, what boats they came from, how much money they had, how they got here. lot of young people traveled without parents. Maybe the Irish famine is one example, getting away from tough governments, if you will, trying to escape. And so the reasons that people might have immigrated are important to find out. And they lead to other reasons and other things. So that part is very tied into history, history of the United States and history of the world. And it may create interest in history on the part of someone who gets into genealogy. So,
yeah. What would you say is significant about learning family history? What would you say is the benefit of doing that?
Well, I think we're all kind of a product of our ancestry. There are those that have studied genetics, and there are now DNA sites that compare the alleles on DNA and see who's more closely related to others. I've done that, and I believe that site is available in the notes too. But it's interesting because that doesn't automatically match up with where the stories tell you you came from. But in many cases, in some of the countries, people moved around and then moved here and to the United States. And it's hard to track them. And in some cases, there's even people who've gone the other direction and or between countries in Europe. And so each country has emigration and immigration records. And trying to track all of that is difficult, obviously, because I live in the United States and all the relatives came here. I have not spent as much time researching in other countries, but there are sites in other countries. Ireland lost a lot of their records in the Easter Uprising in 1916, but they still have some national records, and they have an archives, and many people do research in Dublin. We didn't take time to do research when we were there. We were way too busy.
Had lots of other things to do.
Yeah. I'm planning to do some when I go back, but it's just one of those things.
Right.
I guess the other thing is that the culture and the traditions and how people are raised, and whether it's religious beliefs, the economy, whether they were farmers or artisans or creative. Obviously, a lot of that passes down from family to family, and it makes sort of who you are and what you are. And so you sometimes find good stuff and bad stuff in tracking it, but I think it's a part of a sense of the individual family history and how they fit into the history of the world and the environment around them. But you can't get any other way unless you take a look at this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you think that learning about family history honors your family?
Well, probably learning about the suicides and those may not honor them. But I do think the interest in the family and the history and the place in the context of the world, or the context of the Civil War, or the context of different things that happened, and how your family fit into it, and how your family fit into the belief systems, faith, customs, traditions. Each person with different families from different backgrounds has their own beliefs, but they also have their ancestors' beliefs. And I don't understand it because I've not studied the LDS Church, but part of the reason that they've gone into this international genealogical tracking and have so many sites is dealing with how they view their ancestors in relation to their family and their church, so that they try to do it in a way that they'll be together in mm-hmm. the next life. And again, I don't purport to understand it, but I think those kinds of things for all families going back and persecution, either by religion or because of religion, is pretty much in everybody's ancestry at some point in time. If you study the Bible, there's lots of persecution going on throughout the Bible. There was lots of persecution going on in each individual family. Many people moved from one country to another to escape that sort of thing. And some moved, I won't say they moved from one religion to another, but may have been pressured or forced into geographic moves in order to keep faith, and others the opposite direction. So there's a lot of those things, but I don't think you can have a real understanding of your family until you kind of get a feel for that. So I think it's important.
Well, that's very interesting. I've not had a lot of interest nor a lot of time to do a lot of research, so I'm really glad that you have, so that I can have those. And I know you gave me a huge folder full of stuff a while back with all kinds of information about my parents and grandparents and great-great-grandparents and uncles, and then for the kids also on their mother's side. And so I appreciate you doing that and checking all that research. I suspect that as I get older and as my kids begin to leave the house, I'm going to get a little bit more nostalgic and probably be more interested in genealogical research. But it's important. And if you look in the Bible, genealogies were really important, and the Jews kept accurate records of their parents and their descendants, and they recorded those. And we see, of course, that in Luke and Mark, or Luke and Matthew, with the genealogy of Jesus. But we also see it in Chronicles and other places where we have very accurate descriptions of genealogies, and that was done so that people might know what tribe they're from, and also so that they might be able to anticipate the Messiah. Now, of course, the Messiah has already come, so we don't need to worry about that, but it's still, I think, important to be able to understand your past and the family history that you have, and by doing that, you can have a better understanding of your background, just as my dad had said. Is there any last words you want to say, Dad, about family history or genealogical research or anything like that?
Well, I imagine you want to wrap this up. However, I'd want to just touch on a couple of things that I might not have mentioned. The cautions I would give is on spelling. Don't be too concerned about whether the name you have now is spelled the same as it was, because it probably wasn't.
Well, that's a good thing. I never liked spelling to begin with.
Well, it'll fit right in. I've mentioned checking the facts, but as you do research, if you can think of or someone else mentions other spellings of your last name, I tell people that, you know, if you think of tracking through Ellis Island or some of the other sites, people coming to the United States, and this is true if people are coming to Australia or coming to, you know, if they went to Australia because Queen Victoria sent them there because they were criminals, there's more record than if they went there on their own, because you could track them, and they may have turned out to be very successful and different people. But it's important to not assume that the only way to spell your name and the only facts are what you've been told, because you're going to find that it's there's a bit different. But it will tie into history, geography, social studies, archaeology, anthropology particularly, because that's how the different cultures reacted. And, you know, many times the Irish fought with each other, and then they'd try to get one king for all of Ireland, and then the Normans would try to come in, and then somebody else would. And so, you know, it's fun to track that. I can talk a lot of time about it, but probably I'd just wrap it up is that even Ancestry.com advertises, when they're advertising their site, that it was so easy. I went on and I clicked a leaf and I found something else. There's now a TV program where some famous people are tracking their ancestry. Don't think it's going to be as easy as they have it, because somebody's paying lots of money for researchers. Almost every site that's in the notes and almost every site you go to has people who are willing to do research for pay, and they usually don't charge that much per hour. But it's a time-consuming thing. And so if you're going to have research done by a researcher, you need to define the size of that task and how far you want them to go. Because unless you're just wealthy and want to spend some money and look around, then have at it.
Yeah, and if you're wealthy and you're Donahue, go ahead and send us the stuff. Yeah.
Send me copies of all the information. I'll be glad to share with you what I have done. And I think that's true. Most genealogy, anybody who's done any of it will share information. I've had a lot of folks that have done free research for me. They've seen what I was looking for. And many of these are in the state-specific or county-specific locations where the individual feels like they know you or your family from past, and they're doing history at the county records anyway, so they might as well look yours up too. Mm-hmm. but that's great. Right. And then other cousins that have done genealogy. When you get down to about third cousins, there's multiple people in the family that have done genealogy, just don't know it.
Right. Very good. Well, Dad, thanks for the time, and thanks for the information you've given and all the research you've done, as well as research for this podcast. And it's been great to have you as a guest on the podcast. And with that, this has been Steve Donahue and Joe Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do to build your legacy?
Now our country is lost, and it's not without cost, for there's many who struggle every day. And I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and bow our heads and pray. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? But just like the plant that withers away, we will leave many seeds behind. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? Change.